admire how the stretchy fabric of her black skirt hugs her ass. Her long hair flows down her back, rippling like a golden curtain with each step she takes. Shit, she's on the move. She reaches the second floor landing and disappears around the corner, and the loss of visual contact spurs me to action. Without missing a beat, I stride toward the stairs and hurry after her.
Grace. In the upstairs powder room, I wash my hands, then dry them with a New England Patriots towel that makes me grin. Sports merchandising has always seemed like such a lucrative industry to me. Slap a team logo on any old item and millions of people will buy it, no matter what it is. I check my reflection in the mirror, satisfied to find that, thanks to my heavy-duty frizz control cream, my hair survived the stifling humidity it endured on the walk to Greek Row. Morris had picked me up at my dorm, and although we talked nonstop all the way here, we haven't spoken much since we came inside. The music is too loud, and Morris is too engrossed in the first-person shooting game they're playing in the den. The moment we arrived, Fat Ted ordered Morris to plant his ass on the couch and slapped a game controller in his hand. I don't mind, though. I've been having fun watching Morris beat Ted's record on every level. Each time he does it, the frat boys cheer as if they're witnessing the final touchdown in the Super Bowl and heckle Fat Ted about getting his ass beat. Fat Ted, by the way, not fat. Sometimes I really don't understand nicknames. When I step out into the hall, I experience the most acute sense of déjà vu. Except this time, instead of Logan walking out of a bathroom and me waiting in the hall, it's the other way around. A surprised noise squeaks out of my throat when I spot him. I haven't seen or spoken to him in 3 days, not since the muffin incident.
"Evening, gorgeous."
He grins at me. Totally digging that skirt. His blue eyes conduct a slow sweep of my bare legs, and I curse Daisy for convincing me to wear a short skirt tonight. I then curse myself for allowing his sultry gaze to unleash a flurry of hot tingles, most of which scurry downward and congregate between my legs. I sigh. "What are you doing here?"
"Attending a party."
He rolls his eyes.
"Why? What brings you here?"
I answer through clenched teeth. "I'm on a date." The confession doesn't faze him in the slightest.
"Yeah? Where's your date at? You should introduce me."
"Not gonna happen." Logan steps closer and his spicy scent surrounds me like a thick haze. His big frame dominates my personal space. Broad shoulders and long legs and a chest that's so ripped, I can see each individual muscle straining beneath his t-shirt. I want to slide my hands beneath his shirt and run my hands over every hard ridge, and then slide them in the opposite direction, slip them inside his pants, and wrap my fingers around his. Snap out of it. I try to regulate my breathing, but it's coming out in shallow bursts. From the way his breath hitches, I know Logan senses the change in my body, the quickening of my pulse, the sexual awareness heating the air between us.
"How long are you going to keep fighting it?"
His voice is husky, laced with desire. "I'm not fighting anything." It's a miracle how composed I sound when my heart is thumping harder than the bass line of the dance track downstairs. "I already made it clear I'm not interested in going out with you, and I don't want to rekindle last year's hookups either. We had some fun, and now we're done."
"Solid rhymes, Dr. Seuss."
Still undeterred, he eliminates 2 more inches of space, standing so close I can feel the heat of his body.
"So you're not attracted to me at all anymore?"
I don't answer. I can't answer. Desire has clogged my throat.
"Because I'm still attracted to you." heavy-lidded eyes rake over my body. If anything, I think I want you even more.
I know what he means. The attraction seems 1,000 times stronger. It's hot and fierce, and I can feel it pulsing deep in my sex. My gaze is glued to his mouth, to the sensual curve of his lower lip. I miss kissing him. I miss the greedy thrust of his tongue and the way he groaned when it swirled against mine. Distance. I need to back away, steel myself against his palpable sex appeal, and my butt bumps the wall. Crap. Nowhere to go. No way to run from the awareness incinerating all the oxygen around us.
Kiss me.
His raspy command is barely audible over the pounding of my heart. His head bends, his mouth inches from mine. I'm mesmerized by it, by the beard growth shadowing his jaw and the way his tongue darts out to moisten his top lip. One kiss wouldn't be the end of the world, right? I can just get it out of my system, get him out of my system. He lifts his hand to my face, and rough fingertips skim my cheek. I shiver.
Kiss me.
He murmurs again, and my control snaps. I grab the back of his head and bring his mouth to mine, kissing him as if possessed. When he groans against my lips, I feel the strangled sound in my clit. Oh, God, I can't breathe. Can't concentrate on anything but his hungry tongue in my mouth and the rapid beating of my heart. He reaches down and cups my ass, pressing my lower body to his and rotating his hips.
I've been fantasizing about this all summer.
His agonized whisper heats my neck before his mouth latches on, sucking hard enough to make me moan. I cling to his broad shoulders, helpless to stop this. He kisses a path back to my lips, teases the seam with his tongue before plunging inside again. His hips keep rocking. So do mine. I'm aching for him and he knows it. He growls softly, then slips one hand under my skirt, his fingers tickling my thigh, gliding higher, moving closer to the spot that's begging for his touch. Millimeters. That's how close he is. I want to scream for him to touch me already, but he's taking his time, rubbing my inner thigh with his thumb. Slowly. Too damn slow. He breaks the kiss and stares into my eyes while his hand eases closer to the crotch of my panties. His fingers tremble. His breathing grows labored. And then he yanks his hand away, his expression so tortured you'd think he'd been waterboarded for 3 days straight.
No, God damn it, he croaks. This wasn't what I wanted.
What? I'm stuttering, still dazed from those mind-melting kisses.
I just wanted a kiss, not a hookup.
He draws a deep breath.
I meant what I said the other day. I want to take you on a date.
Logan, I trail off warily. Footsteps echo from the stairs and Logan quickly steps back, his gaze shifting to the landing. When Morris rounds the corner, my heart jumps to my throat. Oh, shit. Morris. I totally forgot about Morris.
There you are,
he says, his smile uneasy.
I was worried you might have gotten lost on your way to the bathroom.
I inhale deeply, willing my heart rate to stabilize, praying that my expression doesn't look too guilty or worse, aroused. No, I found it, I answer. I ran into a friend on my way out. Logan's nostrils flare. This is Logan, I add, then gesture to him as if Morris couldn't figure it out for himself. My date nods at the guy I was just making out with.
Nice to meet you.
He glances at me.
Ready to rejoin the party?
No. Yes. I don't even know anymore. What I do know is that I came to this party with Morris, who happens to be a terrific person, and I'm not about to ditch him for another guy, no matter how tempted I may be. Sure, I make only the briefest amount of eye contact with Logan as I murmur, "I'll see you around." Then I follow Morris downstairs and force myself not to look over my shoulder. But I can feel Logan's eyes on me the entire time.
Chapter 22. Logan. It's a damn shame that duels don't play a role in the modern world anymore. Because right now, I'd totally be down for slapping a leather glove on Morris Ruffalo's cheek and challenging him to one. What the hell kind of name is that anyway? Morris Ruffalo. I'm highly suspicious of people who have last names for first names. And Ruffalo? Is he Italian? He didn't look it. And yes, I know the name of the guy Grace came to the party with last night. After she deserted me upstairs, I asked around and found out everything I needed to know. His name, his rep, and of course, his dorm, which happens to be my current location. I've just knocked on the guy's door, but he's taking his sweet-ass time answering. I know there's someone in there, though, because I can hear the muffled sound of a television from inside the room. I knock a second time, and an aggravated voice calls out, "One sec." Good, he's home. I'd like to get this out of the way fast so I can enjoy the rest of my Saturday. When he opens the door and finds me standing there, a deep scowl twists his mouth. "What do you want?" "Okay, then." I was wondering if Grace would tell him about the kiss, and his visible hostility answers that question. "I came here to declare my intentions toward Grace," I announce. "Gee, how honorable of you," Morris snorts. "But the truly honorable thing would have been to not make out with my date last night." I let out a remorseful sigh. "That's the other reason I'm here. To apologize." Despite the perma-scowl on his face, he opens the door wider and takes a reluctant step back. An invitation to come in. I follow him inside, sparing a quick look at the clutter-ridden room before getting down to business. "I'm sorry I moved in on your date. It was a total violation of bro code. And for that, I'm offering you one free swing at me. Just make sure to stay away from my nose because I've broken that motherfucker way too many times. And I'm scared one day it won't heal right." Disbelief-laced laughter flies out of his mouth. "Dude, you can't be serious." "Sure I am." I widen my stance. "Go ahead. I promise I won't hit back." Morris shakes his head, looking both amused and irritated. "No thanks. I'll pass. Now say whatever else you want to say and then get lost. Suit yourself." "That was a one-time offer, by the way." I shrug. "Okay, next. You should know that as long as you and Grace aren't exclusive, I won't stop trying to win her back. Regret rushes through me, and my voice shakes a little. We hooked up back in April, and I screwed up pretty badly." "Yeah, she told me." "She did?" He nods. "On our way back home from the party last night. She didn't offer many details, but she made it pretty clear that you messed shit up." "Yep," I say glumly. "But I'm going to fix it. I know that's probably not what you want to hear, but I figured I should warn you, because you might be seeing a lot more of me. You know, if you go out with Grace again." I cock a brow. "Are you going out with her again?" "Maybe. Maybe not." He cocks his brow. "Either way, it's none of your business." "Fair enough." I shove my hands in my pockets. "Anyway, that's all I wanted to say. I hope there's no hard feelings about last night. I didn't show up planning to kiss her. It just sort of happened, and..." "Holy shit, are you playing Mob Boss?" My gaze has landed on the frozen image on the TV that's mounted on the wall opposite the bed. Suspicion darkens his eyes. "You know this game? Nobody I talk to about it has heard of it." I wander over to the cabinet beneath the TV and pick up the video game case. "Yep, I have the identical one at home." "Dude, I'm all over this game," I tell him. "One of my teammates got me hooked on it, this guy Fitzy. Well, his name's Colin Fitzgerald, but we call him Fitzy. He's a serious gamer, plays a ton of weird shit nobody even knows exists. He actually reviews games for the Briar blog. Are you fucking kidding me? Morris exclaims. You actually know F. Gerald? I'm obsessed with his reviews. Wait, he's your teammate? Yeah. Fitzy uses an alias for the blog. He doesn't want chicks knowing he's a hardcore geek. I grin. As hockey players, we have a certain reputation to uphold. Morris shakes his head in amazement. I can't believe you're friends with F. Gerald. He's a fucking legend in the gaming community. He trails off, and our surprisingly animated discussion reaches its conclusion, an awkward silence creeping in to take its place. Sighing, I gesture to the screen and advise, save the ammo. His eyes narrow. What? You keep failing this level, right? With utmost weariness, he nods. Same thing happened to me. I'd make it all the way to the end, but then I wouldn't be able to kill Don Angelo because I'd be out of ammo, and there are no fucking ammo crates in the warehouse. I offer a helpful suggestion. There's a switchblade on the docks. Grab that and use it on Angelo's enforcers. Then bust out the AK when you reach the warehouse. You might die the first few times, but eventually you'll get used to killing with the knife. Trust me. The switchblade, he says doubtfully. Trust me, I repeat. Do you want me to pass it for you? Fuck off, I'll pass it myself. He reaches for the controller, then sighs and looks my way. So where's the knife? I flop down beside him. Okay, it's hidden in the corner of the shipyard, near the dockmaster's office. Just head that way, and I'll show you when you get there. Morris presses restart.
Grace. The first thing I do after marching out of the media building on Monday evening is send a very curt text message to one John Logan. Me. Are you home? Him.
Yep.
Me. Text me your address. I'm coming over. It's almost a full minute before he responds. Him.
What if I don't want any visitors?
Me. Seriously? After all your wooing, you're really going to say no? His next message pops up in no time at all. It's his address. Ha, that's what I thought. My next course of action is to call a taxi. Normally, I don't mind the 30-minute walk to Hastings, but I'm afraid my anger might multiply to a scary level if I allow it 30 whole minutes to fester. Yep, I'm angry and annoyed and thoroughly flabbergasted. I knew Morris wasn't thrilled about what happened at the Sigma party, but he hadn't given me any indication that it was a deal breaker. If anything, he seemed incredibly understanding when I explained my history with Logan on the walk home, which makes what just happened 100 times more perplexing. I fidget impatiently during the 5-minute cab ride, and when we reach our destination, I slap a $10 bill at the driver and open the back door before the car even stops moving. It's my first visit to Logan's house, but I don't give my surroundings more than a perfunctory inspection. Neat lawn, white stoop, and a front door I immediately pound my fist against. Dean answers the door wearing nothing but a pair of basketball shorts, his blonde hair sticking up in all directions. Hey! He greets me in surprise. Hi. I set my jaw. I'm here to see Logan. He gestures for me to come in, then points to the staircase on our left.
He's in his room, second door on the right.
Thanks. That's the extent of the conversation. He doesn't inquire as to the reason for my visit, and I don't offer an explanation. I simply march upstairs to Logan's room. The door is wide open, so I have a clear view of him lying on a double bed, his knees drawn up and an open textbook balanced against them. There's a deep furrow in his strong forehead, as if he's concentrating on what he's reading, but his gaze shoots to the door when he hears my footsteps.
Shit, you got here fast.
He tosses the book aside and hops to his feet. I stalk inside and close the door behind me, requiring privacy for the tongue lashing I'm about to give him. What is wrong with you? I say in lieu of greeting. You went to Morris's dorm and declared your intentions? He offers a faint smile.
Of course, it was the noble thing to do. I can't be chasing after another guy's girl without his knowledge.
I'm not his girl, I snap. We went on one date, and now I'm never going to be his girl because he doesn't want to go out with me again.
What the hell?
Logan looks startled.
I'm disappointed in him. I thought he had more of a competitive spirit than that.
Seriously? You're going to pretend to be surprised? He won't see me again because your jackass self told him he couldn't.
Astonishment fills his eyes.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
Is that what he told you?
Logan demands. Not in so many words.
I see. Well, what words did he actually use?
I grit my teeth so hard my jaw aches. He said he's backing off because he doesn't want to get in the middle of something so complicated. I pointed out that there's nothing complicated about it, seeing as you and I are not together. My aggravation heightens. And then he insisted that I need to give you a chance because you're a, I angrily air quote Morris's words, stand-up guy who deserves another shot. Logan breaks out in a grin. I stab the air with my finger. Don't you dare smile. Obviously, you put those words in his mouth. And what the hell was he jabbering about when he told me you and him were family? All the disbelief I'd felt during my talk with Morris comes spiraling back, making me pace the bedroom in hurried strides. What did you say to him, Logan? Did you brainwash him or something? How are you guys family? You don't even know each other. Strangled laughter sounds from Logan's direction. I spin around and level a dark glower at him.
He's talking about the joint family we created in Mob Boss. It's this role-playing game where you're the don of a mob family and you're fighting a bunch of other mafia bosses for territory and rackets and stuff. We played it when I went over there, and I ended up staying until 4 in the morning. Seriously, it was intense.
He shrugs.
We're the Loris crime syndicate.
I'm dumbfounded. Oh my God. Loris? As in Logan and Morris? They fucking Brangelina'd themselves? What is happening? I burst out. You guys are best friends now?
He's a cool guy. Actually, he's even cooler in my book now for stepping down like that. I didn't ask him to. But clearly he grasps what you refuse to see.
Yeah, and what's that? I mutter.
That you and I are perfect for each other?
No words. There are no words to accurately convey what I'm feeling right now. Horror, maybe. Absolute insanity. I mean, it's not like I'm madly in love with Morris or anything, but if I'd known that kissing Logan at the party would lead to this, I would have strapped on a frickin' chastity gag. I draw a calming breath. You used me, I remind him. His features crease with regret.
Unintentionally, and I'm trying to make up for that.
How? By asking me out? By buying me muffins and kissing me at parties? I'm so frazzled I can barely think straight. I'm not even convinced you actually like me, Logan. This whole thing feels like it's centered on your ego. The only reason you even saw me again after that first night was because you couldn't handle that I didn't have an orgasm. And at the party, when you found out I was on a date with someone else, it was like you went out of your way to stake a claim or some shit. Your actions scream ego, not genuine feelings for me.
That's not true. What about the night I came to the dining hall? How did that benefit my ego?
His voice is gruff.
I like you, Grace.
Why? I challenge. Why do you like me?
Because?
He drags a hand through his dark hair.
You're fun to be around. You're smart, sweet. You make me laugh. Oh, and just the sight of you gets me hard.
I swallow a laugh. What else? Embarrassment colors his cheeks.
I'm not sure. We don't know each other very well, but everything I do know about you, I like. And everything I don't know, I want to find out.
He sounds so earnest, but a part of me still doesn't trust him. It's the hurt and humiliated Grace who almost had sex with him in April, who told him she was a virgin and then watched him scramble off the bed as if it was covered with ants, who sat there, naked, while he said he couldn't sleep with her because he was hung up on somebody else. As if sensing my doubts, he hurries on in a pleading voice.
Give me another chance. Let me prove to you that I'm not an egocentric ass.
I hesitate.
Please, tell me what it'll take for you to go out with me and I'll do it. I'll do anything.
Well, that's interesting. I'm not the type to play games. I'm really not. But I can't fight this nagging distrust, the cynical voice in my head warning me his intentions might not be pure. Yet, I also can't bring myself to say no again because another part of me, the one that loves spending time with this guy, wants me to say yes. God, maybe I do need him to prove it to me. Maybe I need him to show me how serious he is about dating me. An idea niggles at the back of my mind. It's a crazy one. Outrageous, even. But hey, if Logan can't tackle a few simple obstacles, then maybe he doesn't deserve another shot. Anything? I say slowly. His blue eyes shine with fortitude.
Anything, gorgeous. Absolutely anything.
Chapter 23. Logan. What rhymes with insensitive? I tap my pen on the kitchen table, beyond frustrated with my current task. Who knew rhyming was so fucking difficult? Garrett, who's dicing onions at the counter, glances over. Sensitive, he says helpfully. Yes, G, I'll be sure to rhyme insensitive with sensitive. Gold star for you. On the other side of the kitchen, Tucker finishes loading the dishwasher and turns to frown at me. What the hell are you doing over there anyway? You've been scribbling on that notepad for the past hour. I'm writing a love poem, I answer without thinking. Then I slam my lips together, realizing what I've done. Dead silence crashes over the kitchen. Garrett and Tucker exchange a look, an extremely long look. Then, perfectly synchronized, their heads shift in my direction, and they stare at me as if I've just escaped from a mental institution. I may as well have. There's no other reason for why I'm voluntarily writing poetry right now. And that's not even the craziest item on Grace's list. That's right. I said it. List. The little brat texted me not one, not two, but six tasks to complete before she agrees to a date. Or maybe gestures is a better way to phrase it. I get it, though. She doesn't think I'm serious about her, and she's worried I'll screw it up again. Hell, she probably believes this list of hers will scare me off, and we won't even get to the dating part. But she's wrong. I'm not afraid of six measly romantic gestures. Some of them will be tough, sure. But I'm a resourceful guy. If I can rebuild the engine of a 69 Camaro using only the parts I found in Munson's crappy junkyard, then I can certainly write a sappy poem and produce, quote, a quality collage showcasing the personality traits of Grace's that I find most bewitching. I just have one question, Garrett starts. Really? Tuck says, because I have many. Sighing, I put my pen down. Go ahead. Get it out of your systems. Garrett crosses his arms. This is for a chick, right? Because if you're doing it for funsies, then that's just plain weird. It's for Grace, I reply through clenched teeth. My best friend nods solemnly. Then he keels over. Asshole. I scowl as he clutches his side, his broad back shuddering with each bellowing laugh. And even while racked with laughter, he manages to pull his phone from his pocket and start typing. What are you doing? I demand. Texting Wellesley. She needs to know this. I hate you. I'm so busy glaring at Garrett that I don't notice what Tucker's up to until it's too late. He snatches the notepad from the table, studies it, and hoots loudly. Holy shit. Gee, he rhymed jackass with cutlass. Cutlass? Garrett wheezes. Like the sword? The car, I mutter. I was comparing her lips to this cherry red cutlass I fixed up when I was a kid. Drawing on my own experience. That kind of thing. Tucker shakes his head in exasperation. You should have compared them to cherries, dumbass. He's right, I should have. I'm a terrible poet, and I do know it. Hey, I say as inspiration strikes. What if I steal the words to Amazing Grace? I can change it to, Terrific Grace. Yep, Garrett cracks. Pure gold right there. Terrific Grace. I ponder the next line. How sweet. Your ass? Tucker supplies. Garrett snorts. Brilliant minds at work. Terrific Grace. How sweet your ass. He types on his phone again. Jesus Christ, will you quit dictating this conversation to Hannah? I grumble. Bros before hoes, dude. Call my girlfriend a hoe one more time and you won't have a bro. Tucker chuckles. Seriously, why are you writing poetry for this chick? Because I'm trying to win her back. This is one of her requirements. That gets Garrett's attention. He perks up, phone poised in hand as he asks, What are the other ones? None of your fucking business. Golly gee, if you do half as good a job on those as you're doing with this epic poem, then you'll get her back in no time. I give him the finger. Sarcasm not appreciated. Then I swipe the notepad from Tuck's hand and head for the doorway. P.S. Next time either of you need to score points with your ladies, don't ask me for help. Jackasses. Their wild laughter follows me all the way upstairs. I duck into my room and kick the door shut, then spend the next hour typing up the sorriest excuse for poetry on my laptop. Jesus, I'm putting more effort into this damn poem than for my actual classes. I still have 50 pages to read for my econ course and a marketing plan to outline. But am I doing either of those things? Nope. I reach for my cell and text Grace. Me, what's your email address? She answers almost instantly. Grace_Ivers@gmail.com. Me. Incoming. This time around, she takes her sweet time messaging back. 45 minutes to be exact. I'm 30 pages into my reading assignment when my phone buzzes. Her. Don't quit your day job, Emily Dickinson. Me. Hey, you didn't say it had to be good. Her. Touché. D minus on the poem. Can't wait to see your collage. Me. How do you feel about glitter? And dick pics? Her. If there's a pic of your dick on that collage, I'm photocopying it and passing it around in the student center. Me. Bad idea. You'll give all the other dudes an inferiority complex. Her. Or an ego boost. Smiling, I quickly type another message. I'm getting that date, gorgeous. There's a long delay, then. Good luck with number 6. She's trying to get in my head. Ha. Well, good fucking luck with that. Grace Ivers has underestimated both my tenacity and my resourcefulness. But she'll find that out soon enough.
Grace. I'm laughing to myself as I sit at my desk rereading the god-awful poem Logan emailed me. His similes crack me up, mostly car or hockey comparisons, and his rhyme scheme is all over the place. Is it A-B-A-B? No, there's a third rhyme in there. A-B-A-C-B? God, this is epic level bad. and yet my heart won't quit doing happy dolphin flips.
What's so funny?
Daisy waltzes into our room back from the one-hour show she hosts at the station. She's in ripped jeans, a teeny tank top, and her trademark docks, but her bangs are now purple. She must have dyed them when I was in class today because they were still pink when I left this morning.
Love the purple, I tell her.
Thanks. Now show me what you're giggling about. She comes up behind me and peers at the screen. Is it that baby koala video Morris forwarded everyone earlier? Because that was so adorable.
Ode to Grace?
She squawks in dismay. Oh, God, do I even want to know? I suppose a better person would have minimized the window before she could read Logan's poem, but I leave it up. It's too hilarious not to. Her laughter reverberates through the room as she scans the poem.
Oh, wow, this is a disaster. Points for the hockey references, though.
Daisy lifts a strand of my hair and scrutinizes it.
Hey, it kind of is the same shade as those Bruins throwback jerseys from the 60s.
I gape at her. How on earth do you know what those look like?
My brother has one.
She grins.
I used to go to all his high school games, which turned me into a reluctant fan. He plays for North Dakota now. I'm surprised my parents haven't disowned us both. We pretty much rejected everything about the South and moved north the first chance we got.
Her gaze shifts back to the screen. So you have a secret admirer?
Admirer, yes. Secret, no.
You know that guy I was telling you about, Logan?
The hockey player?
I nod. I'm making him jump through a few hoops before I go out with him.
Daisy looks intrigued. What kind of hoops?
Well, this poem for one. And?
I shrug, then grab my phone and pull up the text I sent him last night, the one that contains the most absurd list I've ever written.
She takes the phone. By the time she's done reading, she's laughing even harder.
Oh my God, this is insane! Blue roses, do those even exist?
I snicker. Not in nature, and not at the flower shop in Hastings, but he might be able to order some from Boston.
You're an evil, evil woman,
she accuses, a wide grin stretching her mouth.
I love it. How many has he done so far?
Just the poem.
I can't believe he's going along with this.
She flops on her bed, then wrinkles her forehead and stares at the mattress.
Did you make my bed?
Yes, I say sheepishly, but she doesn't seem pissed. I'd already warned her that my OCD might rear its incredibly tidy head every now and then, and so far she hasn't batted an eye when it happens. The only items on her don't touch or I'll fuck you up list are her shoes and her iTunes music library.
Wait, but you didn't fold my laundry?
She mock gasps.
What the hell, Grace? I thought we were friends.
I stick out my tongue. I'm not your maid. Fold your own damn laundry. Daisy's eyes gleam.
So you're telling me you can look at that basket overflowing with fresh from the dryer clothes?
She gestures to the basket in question. And you aren't the teensiest bit tempted to fold them?
All those shirts forming wrinkles as we speak?
Lonely socks longing for their pairs.
Let's fold your laundry, I blurt out.
A gale of laughter overtakes her small body.
That's what I thought.
Chapter 24. Logan. An entire week passes before I'm able to tick another item off the list. So far, I've completed 4 out of the 6, but these last two are a bitch to acquire. The wheels are in motion regarding number 6, but number 5 is fucking hard. I've been searching high and low for it, even contemplated buying it online, but those things are a lot more expensive than I thought they'd be. It's Tuesday afternoon, and I'm with Garrett and our buddy Justin. We're picking up Hannah, Allie, and Justin's girlfriend, Stella, at the drama building. And then the six of us are supposed to drive to the diner in Hastings for lunch. But the moment we enter the cavernous auditorium where the girls told us to meet them, my jaw drops and our plans change. Holy shit. Is that a red velvet chaise lounge? The guys exchange a what-the-fuck look. Sure, Justin says. Why? I'm already sprinting toward the stage. The girls aren't here yet, which means I have to act fast. For fuck's sake, get over here, I call over my shoulder. Their footsteps echo behind me, and by the time they climb on the stage, I've already whipped my shirt off and am reaching for my belt buckle. I stop to fish my phone from my back pocket and toss it at Garrett, who catches it without missing a beat. What's happening right now? Justin bursts out. I drop trow, kick my jeans away, and dive onto the plush chair wearing nothing but my black boxer briefs. Quick, take a picture. Justin doesn't stop shaking his head, over and over again, and he's blinking like an owl, as if he can't fathom what he's seeing. Garrett, on the other hand, knows better than to ask questions. Hell, he and Hannah spent 2 hours constructing origami hearts with me the other day. His lips twitch uncontrollably as he gets the phone in position. Wait. I pause in thought. What do you think? Double guns or double thumbs up? What is happening? We both ignore Justin's baffled exclamation. Show me the thumbs up, Garrett says. I give the camera a wolfish grin and stick up my thumbs. My best friend's snort bounces off the auditorium walls. Vito, do the guns, definitely the guns. He takes 2 shots, one with flash, one without. And just like that, another romantic gesture is in the bag. As I hastily put my clothes back on, Justin rubs his temples with so much vigor it's as if his brain has imploded. He gapes as I tug my jeans up to my hips, gapes harder when I walk over to Garrett so I can study the pictures. I nod in approval. Damn, I should go into modeling. You photograph really well, Garrett agrees in a serious voice. And dude, your package looks huge. Fuck, it totally does. Justin drags both hands through his dark hair. I swear on all that is holy, if one of you doesn't tell me what the hell just went down here, I'm going to lose my shit. I chuckle. My girl wanted me to send her a boudoir shot of me on a red velvet chaise lounge, but you have no idea how hard it is to find a goddamn red velvet chaise lounge. You say this as if it's an explanation. It's not. Justin sighs like the weight of the world rests on his shoulders. You hockey players are fucked up. Nah, we're just not pussies like you and your football crowd. Garrett says sweetly. We own our sex appeal, dude. Sex appeal? That was the cheesiest thing I've ever... No, you know what? I'm not gonna engage, Justin grumbles. Let's find the girls and grab some lunch.
Grace. Oh my God, he actually did it. I stare at my phone, torn between laughing, groaning, and running to the nearest sex shop to buy a vibrator because, hot damn, John Logan has the sexiest body on the planet. Standing in the middle of the radio station with my tongue hanging out probably isn't appropriate work conduct, but technically I'm not working today. I just came in to meet Morris for lunch, and I don't even care that I'm drooling in public. The picture is that delicious. Logan's bare chest taunts me from the phone screen. Sleek, honey-toned muscles, the dusting of hair between his perfectly formed pecs, his rippled abdomen, Jesus. And his boxer briefs are so tight against his groin and thighs that I can see the outline of his...
Well, fuck a duck,
comes Morris's delighted voice. I jerk in surprise, then spin around to glare at him for sneaking up on me from behind. Judging by the amusement dancing in his eyes, it's obvious he peeked over my shoulder and caught a glimpse of the photo I'd been drooling over.
I was wondering how he'd pull that one off,
Morris remarks, still grinning like a fool.
Shouldn't have doubted him, though. That dude is an unstoppable force of nature.
I narrow my eyes. He told you about the picture?
About the whole list, actually. We hung out last night. Loris is close to taking over Brooklyn, by the way. And he was moaning and groaning about not being able to track down a red velvet couch.
Morris shrugs.
I offered to throw a red blanket on the sofa in my common room and take some pictures, but he said you'd consider that cheating and deprive him of your love.
Stifling a sigh, I shove the phone in my purse, then walk over to the mini-fridge across the room and grab a bottle of water. I twist off the cap, doing my best to ignore the sheer enjoyment Morris is getting out of this.
I wish I was gay,
he says ruefully. A snicker pops out. Uh-huh, go on. I'm willing to follow you down this rabbit hole and see where it leads.
Seriously, Gretch, I love him. I have a boner for him.
Morris sighs.
If I'd known he existed, I wouldn't have asked you out in the first place.
Gee, thanks.
Aw, shut up. You're awesome, and I'd tap that in a second, but I can't compete with this guy. He's operating on a whole other level when it comes to you.
It's funny. After our brief, ill-fated foray into dating, Morris and I have become even closer friends. Sometimes, the lingering guilt about kissing Logan at the Sigma party still arises, but Morris won't let me apologize for it anymore. He insists that one measly date doesn't count as either a relationship or the committing of adultery, and I think he means it. I also think it's probably better that we didn't start anything up because I've started noticing the way he looks at Daisy, and I'm pretty sure she's the one he really wants to tap. As for me, I want that date with Logan more than anything else in this world, and I regret all this hoop jumping because, honestly, he won me over the second he sent me that poem. And clearly he wants this date as much as I do, otherwise he wouldn't have put so much effort into the most kick-ass collage I've ever seen. And the origami hearts. And soggy near-death roses that he used food coloring to turn blue. And now, the boudoir photo? His determination is downright inspiring. You know what? I say slowly. I feel bad making him do all this stuff when we both know I'm saying yes to the date. I think I should tell him not to bother with the last item.
Don't.
Morris says instantly. My forehead furrows. Why not?
Purely selfish reasons.
He chuckles.
I'm curious to see what he comes up with.
I press my lips together to fight a laugh. Honestly, so am I.
Logan. 2 days after fate delivers the red velvet chaise lounge into my life, I speed off the highway ramp and drive toward Hastings, with Garrett sitting quietly in the passenger seat. Neither of us said much during the one-hour return trip from Wilmington, though we probably have different reasons for our silence. Me? I can't stop thinking about the arena we drove past on our way to the restaurant. It was nothing like the splendor of TD Garden. Just a large, nondescript building, similar to any old arena you might find in New England. And yet I'd sell my soul to the fucking devil for a chance to wake up every morning and practice there. I pull into our driveway, but leave the engine running as I glance at Garrett. Thanks for doing that, man. I owe you big. I pause. I know you don't like relying on your dad's connections. He shrugs. Mikey's my godfather. I was using my own connections. But I know he hated making that call. Godfather or not, NHL legend Mikey Hansen is still Phil Graham's best friend. And Garrett has spent most of his life trying to separate himself from his asshole father's shadow. Have you spoken to him lately? I ask cautiously. Your dad, I mean. Nope. He calls every few weeks, but I just press ignore. Have you spoken to yours? A couple days ago, I've been making an effort to check in on Dad and Jeff, and Mom and David. Because once preseason starts and our practice schedule becomes more intense, I'll be living in a hockey bubble and will probably forget to call my family. Garrett goes quiet for a beat, then looks over thoughtfully. Is she worth all this, bro? I don't ask who she is. I simply nod. It's not just for the sex? My smile is rueful. We haven't had sex yet. Surprise flickers through his eyes. For real? I assumed you fucked her back in April. Nope. The corners of his mouth tug upward. Either I'm imagining it, or he actually looks proud of me. Well, then that just answered my question about her being worth it. He thumps me on the shoulder, then reaches for the door handle. Good luck. Truth be told, I'm not sure I need luck. Every time I delivered one of my cringingly romantic gifts to Grace's door, I was rewarded with a brilliant smile that lit up her entire face. And either I was imagining it, or she kept staring at my mouth, so damn intently, as if she was dying to kiss me. I didn't make a move, though. Didn't want to push too hard, too fast, but I have a feeling I might be getting that kiss tonight. I knock on Grace's door 20 minutes later, ordering myself to keep the gloating to a minimum. But damn, I'm feeling pretty fucking gloaty about the way I've successfully fulfilled all of her demands. It really is a shame that people don't grasp what a stubborn motherfucker I am. Grace doesn't look surprised to see me when she opens the door. Probably because I texted to let her know I was coming by. I didn't tell her why, but she takes one look at my face and sucks in a breath. You didn't. I hold out my cell in triumph. Your celebrity endorsement, my lady. Okay, get in here. I have to see this. One hand snatches the phone while the other tugs me into the room. Her roommate Daisy is cross-legged on the bed, and she grins when she spots me. If it isn't Mr. Romance himself. What have you got for us tonight, big boy? I grin back. Nothing special, just, hey, Grace. A voice drawls out of the phone speaker. Grace has loaded the video and pressed play with impressive speed, and her roommate freezes at the sound of the cheerful male greeting. Shane Lukoff here, the dark-haired guy on the screen continues.
Holy shit!
Daisy screeches. She dives off the bed and races over to Grace, while I stand in front of them smirking the smirk of all smirks. Coming to you from Wilmington with an important message, announces the second-year Bruins star. Lukoff took the league by storm with his explosive rookie year, and people are salivating to see what he does this upcoming season. The 20-year-old is already being compared to Sidney Crosby, and honestly, I don't think it's that far off the mark. I've known Logan a long time, Lukoff winks at the camera. And by long time, I mean 5 whole minutes. But what is time, really? From what I can tell, he's a good guy. Easy on the eyes. Rumor has it, he's a total bruiser on the ice. That's all I really need to know to give him my endorsement. So go out with him, sweetheart. A wide grin fills the screen. My name is Shane Lukoff, and I approve this message. The video ends. Daisy is busy picking her jaw off the floor. Grace is staring at me as if she's never seen me before in her life. So? I blink innocently. What time should I pick you up tomorrow night?
Chapter 25. Grace. Hastings has several nice restaurants, but if you're looking for fancy, then Pharaoh's is the way to go. The Italian bistro is gorgeous. Dark oak-paneled walls, secluded booths, blood-red linen tablecloths, and candlelight. Lots and lots of candlelight. It requires a reservation at least a week in advance, and yet Logan somehow snags a table in less than 24 hours. When he told me where we were going, I thought maybe he'd made a reservation last week in anticipation of completing the items on my list, but on the drive over, he admits to calling in a favor to get us a table. Did I mention he's wearing a suit? He looks spectacular in a suit. The crisp black jacket stretches across his wide shoulders, and he decided to forego a tie so I have the most delicious view of his strong throat peeking from the open top button of his white dress shirt. The waiter leads us to our booth, and Logan waits for me to slide in first, then sits right beside me. "We're same siding," I squeak. "That's intimate. It's the kind of seating arrangement reserved for super-in-love couples who can't keep their hands off each other." Logan casually stretches his arm along the back of the booth, his fingers resting on my bare shoulder. He strokes lightly, teasingly.
"That's,"
he prompts. "Perfectly fine by me," I finish, and he gives a knowing chuckle. His thigh is pressed up against mine, a hard slab of flesh that demonstrates how ripped he is. My short black dress is ridden up a bit, and I hope he doesn't notice the goosebumps rising on my bare legs. I'm not cold, just the opposite, in fact. His nearness and the heat of his body makes me feverish.
"Can I ask you something?"
He hedges after the waiter recites the specials and pours us two glasses of sparkling water.
"Sure."
I angle my body so we can actually look at each other. This same side thing was not designed for eye contact.
"How come you don't ask me about hockey?"
I freeze, which he obviously mistakes for discomfort because he hurries on almost apologetically.
"Not that I mind. It's actually kind of refreshing. Most girls ask me about nothing but hockey, like they think it's the only topic I'm capable of talking about. It's just strange that you've never brought it up, not even once."
I reach for my water glass and take a very, very long sip. Not the most brilliant stalling tactic, but it's the only one I can think of. I knew this would come up eventually. If anything, I'm surprised it didn't come up sooner. But that doesn't mean I was looking forward to it.
"Well,
the thing is," I inhale, then continue with rapid fire speed.
"I'm not a hockey fan."
A wrinkle appears in his forehead.
"What?"
I repeat myself slowly this time with actual pauses between each word. "I'm not a hockey fan." Then I hold my breath and await his reaction. He blinks, blinks again, and again. His expression is a mixture of shock and horror.
"You don't like hockey?"
I regretfully shake my head.
"Not even a little bit?"
Now I shrug. "I don't mind it as background noise."
"Background noise?
But I won't pay attention to it if it's on." I bite my lip. I'm already in this deep. Might as well deliver the final blow. "I come from a football family."
"Football?"
he says dully. "Yeah, my dad and I are huge Pats fans, and my grandfather was an offensive lineman for the Bears back in the day."
"Football?"
He grabs his water and takes a deep swig, as if he needs to rehydrate after that bombshell. I smother a laugh. "I think it's awesome that you're so good at it, though, and congrats on the Frozen Four win." Logan stares at me.
"You could have told me this before I asked you out. What are we even doing here, Grace? I can never marry you now. It would be blasphemous."
His twitching lips make it clear that he's joking, and the laughter I've been fighting spills over. "Hey, don't go canceling the wedding just yet. The success rate for intersport marriages is a lot higher than you think. We could be a Pats Bruins family." I pause. "But no Celtics. I hate basketball."
"Well, at least we have that in common."
He shuffles closer and presses a kiss to my cheek.
"It's all right. We'll work through this, gorgeous. Might need couples counseling at some point, but once I teach you to love hockey, it'll be smooth sailing for us."
"You won't succeed," I warn him. "Ramona spent years trying to force me to like it. Didn't work."
"She gave up too easily then. I, on the other hand, never give up."
No, he certainly doesn't. If he did, we wouldn't be in this incredibly romantic restaurant right now, nestled together on the same side of the booth.
"Hey, speaking of Ramona..."
His expression darkens slightly. What's going on with you two? Tension trickles down my spine. You mean since she went behind my back and offered to comfort you after V-Day? He grins.
You call it V-Day? I've been calling it V-Night.
We burst out laughing, and a part of me finds peculiar solace in that, being able to laugh about a night that left me feeling so humiliated, so rejected. But it's in the past. Logan has gone above and beyond to prove how much he regrets what happened and how sincere he is about starting over. And I wasn't lying that day in the park when I told him I don't hold grudges. Both my parents drilled the importance of forgiveness into me, of expelling the bitterness and anger instead of letting those negative emotions consume me. I met up with her the day I saw you at the coffee hut, I admit. We talked. She apologized. I told her I was willing to give the friendship another chance, but that I want to do it at my own pace, and she agreed. He doesn't say anything. What? You don't think I should? Logan looks pensive.
I don't know. Hitting on me was a really shitty move on her part. Doesn't exactly put her in the running for friend of the year.
A frown touches his lips.
I don't like the idea that she might hurt you again.
Me neither, but cutting her off feels wrong. I've known her my whole life.
Yeah? I assumed you two just got assigned to the same dorm.
Nope. We've been friends since childhood. I explain how Ramona and I were next door neighbors, and from there the conversation shifts to what it was like growing up in Hastings, then to what it was like for him to grow up in Munson. I'm surprised by the complete lack of awkward silences. There's always at least one on a first date. But Logan and I don't seem to have that problem. The only time we stop talking is when the waiter takes our orders and then again when he delivers the check. 2 hours. I can hardly believe it when I peek at the time on my phone and realize how long we've been here. The food was phenomenal. The conversation entertaining. And the company absolutely incredible. After we polish off our dessert, a piece of decadent tiramisu that Logan insists we share, he doesn't even allow me to look at the bill. He simply tucks a wad of cash in the leather case the waiter dropped off, then slides out of the booth and holds out his hand. I take it, wobbling slightly on my heels as he helps me to my feet. I feel weak-kneed and giddy. I can't stop smiling. But I'm gratified to see that he's sporting the same goofy grin.
This was nice,
he murmurs. Yes, it was. He laces our fingers together and proceeds to keep them like that all the way to the car, where he reluctantly lets go so he can open my door for me. The moment he's in the driver's seat, our fingers intertwine again, and he drives one-handed the entire way back to campus. It's not until we're standing outside my door that his easygoing demeanor falters.
So how did I do?
He asks gruffly. I snicker. You want a detailed performance review of our date? He tugs on the collar of his shirt, more nervous than I've ever seen him.
Kind of. I haven't been on a date in, fuck, ages. Since freshman year, I think.
My surprised gaze flies to his. Really?
I mean, I've hung out with girls, played pool at the bar, talked at parties, but an actual date? Picking her up and having dinner and then walking her to her door?
The most adorable red splotches color his cheeks.
Yeah, haven't done that in a while.
God, I want to throw my arms around him and squeeze all the cuteness out of him. Instead, I pretend to mull it over. Okay, well, your choice of restaurant. Perfect 10. Chivalry. You opened my car door, so that's a 10 too. Conversational prowess. 9.
9?
He blusters. I flash an impish smile. I'm taking a point off for the hockey talk. That was rather dreary. Logan narrows his eyes.
You've gone too far, woman.
I ignore him. Affection levels? 10. You had your arm around me and held my hand, which was sweet. Oh, and the last one. Goodnight kiss. Yet to be rated, but you should know you're starting at -1 because you requested a performance review instead of making your move. His blue eyes twinkle.
Seriously? I'm being penalized for trying to be a gentleman?
-2 now, I taunt. Your opening is getting narrower and narrower, Johnny. Soon you won't. His mouth captures mine in a blistering kiss. Belonging. It's the only way to describe the exquisite rush of sensation that washes over me. His lips belong on mine. Heat floods my core as his large hands cup my cheeks, thumbs stroking my jaw as he kisses me with a shocking contrast of tenderness and hunger. His tongue slicks over mine, one sweet stroke, then another, before he eases his mouth away.
You called me Johnny,
he says, his breath tickling my lips. Is that not allowed? I tease. His thumb softly grazes my bottom lip.
My friends call me John sometimes, but only my family calls me Johnny.
His gaze burns with intensity.
I liked it.
My pulse accelerates as his mouth brushes over mine again, the slightest amount of contact, like a feather tickling my lips. He slides both hands down my bare arms, leaving goosebumps in his wake, then rests them on my hip, casual almost, except there's nothing casual about the way his touch makes me feel.
Will you go out with me again?
He's so tall I have to tilt my head to look at him. A part of me is tempted to make him sweat, but there's no stopping the swift, unequivocal answer that escapes my mouth. Absolutely. Chapter 26. Grace. On our second date, Logan and I go to a party, which under normal circumstances I wouldn't be nervous about. Ramona dragged me to a shit ton of off-campus parties last year, so if anything, I should be an old pro by now. But this party happens to be at Bo Maxwell's house, the frickin' quarterback of Breyer's football team. The football crowd freaks me out. Their parties are rowdy and tend to get shut down by the cops more often than not. And most of the players are loud and cocky and walk around like they're God's gift to the world. Which is ironic because last year the team put up the worst record Breyer has seen in 25 years.